Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm really humbled to be here. Patty, I am an alcoholic. Took me a while to understand what that meant. And I'm super humbled because there's so many people from our little area that are on this meeting tonight. About half my home group is here. I'm just blowing my socks off. It's so good to see all of y'all. And you're going to know when I'm lying. Darn it. Yeah, I'm pretty emotional. It's been a long week. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to get involved in some outside organizations, one of which is with the Disabled American Veterans and other veterans organizations. And Miles knows some of the stuff I do. But I've been involved in a donation drive for the Veterans Hospital here in Richmond, and a friend of mine and I have been out there every day since Tuesday a week ago for 3 or 4 hours a day, and today we were out there all day. I got home in time to prop my feet up for a few minutes, grab a shower, and drive all the way to Madison to be with all of y'all tonight. So anyway, it is a pleasure. My sobriety date is July 1st, 2011, right at 30 years behind y'all's speaker from last week. He was phenomenal. I got a lot out of his spiritual journey. After the meeting, I talked with Billy briefly and said, you know, that's a lot for me to follow, you know, me thinking that it's all about me anyway. And it's not. It's about us. Y'all are my family. And this is what I've been thinking about. I have so many families today. And this is probably the most important one. We might not share any DNA or any blood or any real history. But we've had the same journey. We've had the same feelings. We might not all drank a lot alike. I drank a lot for a long time. But we found our way here, and we found our way into the solution, a better way of living for me. I drank for 40 years. I didn't come into the program until I was 57. Not all of those years were bad years. I could tell you some funny stories. But they're not really funny when I think back on them. I heard a speaker on a tape, and of course, as soon as I went to say a name, it went out of my head. And y'all will know who he is. He's been a circuit speaker, and he's from Sandusky, Ohio. Kent. I think it's Kent. Anyway, he said he was telling these funny stories, and his sponsor, one of the old timers in the group, said, "Do you really think it's funny? Was it funny to your parents? Was it funny to your girlfriend? Was it funny to your coach?" And oh my goodness, by the time I really started drinking, I didn't have a coach or anything because I was out of school. But yeah, it affected my family. It affected my friends. It affected my coworkers. So my funny stories, some of them are hilarious. But at the end of the day, I can remember them and not repeat them. I can share them with the sponsee. I can share them with other people in the rooms. And yeah, we can get a chuckle out of it, but I have to remember that it wasn't about me. It was about the people I affected in my journey, my long journey to get here. I'm the third child of six, but the first daughter. So of course I was the favorite. Dad was career military, so I didn't have to move as much as my older brothers, but I was born outside of Philly, and I know I sound like that today. My parents are from the Midwest. They're from Cincinnati, Ohio, and like I said, I was born outside of Philly. And then we spent like 4 years in Germany when I was very young and came back here and settled in Colonial Heights. So I actually grew up in Colonial Heights, which is just north of Petersburg. I now live in Chester, which is just north of Colonial Heights. My parents divorced when I was in the fifth grade, and That's the only really bad thing I can remember happening in my life. And my father left me. He didn't leave my siblings. And he didn't leave my mother. He left me. I felt like I was daddy's girl. And I was just devastated and embarrassed. And just, it ripped me to pieces, evidently. That's what all the counselors have said. You know, the since I got sober, I've had some counseling. And they said, you know, you suffer from abandonment. Well, I think I suffer from alcoholism, and that's a long and short of it for me today, and taking myself so seriously. I was a bedwetter, and, you know, that carried on over into my drinking, believe it or not. I outgrew it for a few years and then went right back to it. So that was a source of embarrassment, as you can well imagine, because my parents tried everything, especially my mom. After Dad was gone, of course he was gone a lot anyway with traveling overseas and stuff. But you know, they tried everything from spankings and waking me up in the middle of the night, and not letting me have anything to drink after 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, and it didn't work. I guess there was something physiologically wrong with me. But they stopped letting me bathe in the morning, so I would go to school, and I distinctly remember in the fourth grade. Somebody saying something that they smelled, they probably said pee, or I don't think they said urine, but anyway, I knew it was me. And that was very embarrassing for me. And I also had messed up teeth. My mom couldn't afford braces, and Dad, at that time wasn't really supporting the family. So I just had a severe overbite and a big split between my teeth, and, very awkward, very insecure. But I don't know if that's when it started or if it started when I was much younger. I don't know. I've heard people share their stories, and they say, I knew, you know, from a young age that I must have been alcoholic just because my feelings were different. Well, that may be so, because I sure reacted to my parents' separation and divorce differently than my brothers and my sister did. But anyway, I mentioned the fear of public speaking. When I was in probably fifth grade, I had to give an oral book report, and I missed 2 days of school because I was physically ill because I couldn't stand in front of people. Of course, I'm sitting today, so that might make it a little bit easier. But I am able to stand in front of my friends and my family and talk about my story today. And that's the grace I've been given through having worked the steps and changing my belief in what my higher power is today. So I did very well in school. I was a good student. But I changed my whole life because I was too much of a chicken. And that's part of one of my biggest defects of character, that and postponing the inevitable, right? I like to delay as long as possible, but I was fearful of going away to college, but that didn't really enter into the reasoning why I ran off in the summer between my junior and senior years and got married the first time. It was more that I was afraid to tell the young man I was dating at the time that I needed to get a life, that we needed to go our separate ways. He was a little bit of a bully, and that has changed over the years. But anyway, so we got married and before I was a senior in high school. So the following June, when I graduated from high school, I was 8 months pregnant with my first child. So, you know, back in 1972, that didn't happen all that often. So I couldn't graduate. They didn't want me to graduate with the class. You know, it was just kind of crazy stuff. But I remember the night I went into labor with that child, I had had two Miller High Lifes playing canasta with my mom and my now ex-husband. So back then it wasn't looked at the way it is today. And I was smoking by that time too. I started drinking before I started smoking. But up until that point in time, most of the time when I drank, I might be riding around in a car with a couple of the girls I played softball with, and we go down to the little place in Petersburg and get some, I think it was 3-2 beer back then, and ride around and drink that six pack. And I never, you know, it was just, to me, it was the fun of being with my friends. But I had my first child, and then when I got pregnant with my second child, I was drinking and I was smoking, but I was smoking more and I was drinking more. And I had changed jobs. By the time that my second daughter was 9 months old, my first husband and I were having some real problems. I had known for a long time that things weren't going to work out. Or maybe if I had been a stronger person, they might have. I don't know. I don't know today. I can't go back and change the past. And that's one thing I've been able to accept just by working these steps. But I was working shift work at the time, and he had just started a new job, and he told me I had to come straight home from work that morning. Well, I had already made plans. I was going to help a friend and some other friends move a piano. You know, I don't know what sense there was in that, but anyway, so I went and did what I was going to do. And when I got home, my mom was at my house, and she asked me point blank, where in the world have you been? Your kids have been here by themselves. The next door neighbor heard the 9-month old crying from one end of the house to her house all the way on the other side of the house. So luckily they had my mom's number, and they called her and went home to my children. I don't know where my life would be right now if that hadn't happened. It was very traumatic for me and for the 3-year-old. She never has forgotten it. We have worked through that. So that was the last day I lived with that man. I was bodily threatened by my ex-brother-in-law that if I went back to him, you know, he'd do some stuff to me. But anyway, but I was already seeing the man I'm married to now. Does that tell you anything about me? I was always searching for something to make me feel better, for something to fill up that missing piece. Whatever it was that I was searching for, I didn't know until I found y'all. A lot of people change jobs, change locations. I didn't change liquors either. I just graduate from beer to bourbon. Oh my goodness. That's what I would have preferred to drink from probably until I died if I hadn't found y'all. Or y'all hadn't found me. I did not find y'all. Y'all found me. And I just lost my total train of thought. How about that? Anyway, I was changing men, I guess, the way most people change jobs or change locations. And I was married. I even did it the second time. And it's nothing I'm proud of. And that man's still with me today. And he knows a lot of my history. He's lived through it. We've been married 40 years now. But I kept the same job. I've had that job for 42 years. And the last five, well, not the last five, the last, so 2 years of the last seven, I was drinking at work, because the last five I was sober. My drinking had gotten to the point I was physically addicted. Luckily, I had another child in there, but that was before the drinking really got to the point that I had lost control. At the end, I would pass out at night or pour myself into the bed. And if I hadn't wet the bed and woke up, then I would come to and I'd have to get a drink. And instead of waking up my husband, who I can tell you loves me more than life itself, he'd do anything for me. Instead of waking him up and telling him I needed help or asking him for help, I'd get up and go find my trusty bottle of vodka and take a couple slugs off of it and crawl back into bed. And it was usually two or three times a night I'd get up and have to take a couple hits. And I was getting to work at quarter to six in the morning. So if you're not going to bed until 11 and you're back at work at six, even if I didn't have vodka in my water bottle, I'm still intoxicated by the time I go back to work. So my mother moved in with us in December of 1981. Our son was born in May of 81, and she moved in for about 6 weeks in December of 81, and she didn't leave until September of 2010, when she had to go into a nursing home. And it was a good life. Man, it was perfect for me. I had a babysitter, you know. It was great because my husband and I both worked shift work. So she really did help me raise my children. But it also enabled me to run the roads in the middle of the day if I wanted to go sneak out and do whatever it was I was up to that day. And if anybody that I'm directly related to drank like me, it was probably my mom. And all of a sudden she, got a talking to, and that's all I can say it was, from two of my brothers and my husband this one particular day, and she quit drinking. But she never, and this is my taking her inventory. She didn't have what I have today. She never moved on from my father and the awful separation and divorce. She never moved outside of her six kids and all the grandchildren and great-grandchildren she's had since then. She didn't have the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me today. She didn't drink. Toward the end, she had forgotten how. She did try to drink a beer a couple of times. She forgot how to smoke cigarettes. I lit her last cigarette for her, and I thought I was going to throw up because I had quit a long time before that. People can't believe that I quit smoking back in 1990, and I didn't quit drinking until 2011. How did you drink and not want to smoke? Well, I just didn't want to smoke anymore. And that was a gift. There are times that now that I wish maybe I had switched them around, but no. My life went exactly the way it was supposed to. My first AA meeting, and I know I'm jumping all around. My first AA meeting was actually in September. I need to do the math, and I don't know why I can't remember this. 1991. And I remember that because, kind of remember it, you can tell. I went with two of the guys I work with, one of which is still an outstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous, upstanding or whatever, outstanding. I don't know if he's outstanding. Anyway, the other one has gone back out. He went back out after 25 years. But we went to a meeting, and it was one of those round robin meetings, and I said, I'm an alcoholic, and you know, I shared a little bit about just wanting to kind of get into that gray zone. And I'm surprised I remember as much as I remember. But a lot of the folks from the Petersburg area, and Billy, you might even know, was Sarge. It was at Sarge Ewing's place, the ranch down here in Chesterfield. And I remember being there, and I remember being in the basement. But I had to go out and drink for 19 more years. I had to work on my story quite a bit more. So when I walked back into my next first meeting, one of those men was sitting in the meeting, even though I was trying to find one that he wouldn't be. He wouldn't be there. But he turned around and said, it took you 19 blankety blank years, but I saved you a seat. And yeah. And even then it didn't stick the first time. I was going to IOP. My daughter my oldest daughter had the courage to come to me and my husband. She said it was harder talking to my husband than it was to me. and say, Mama, we know you're drinking at work. And she was kind of expecting me to deny it. And I said, no, baby, I know I've got a problem, but I needed somebody to offer the help. I wasn't going to ask for it. And I think that was me in a nutshell. You offer me the help and maybe I'll take it, but I'm not asking anybody for anything. And I know most of it was fear-based now, but I was not going to ask for help. I wasn't even going to ask my husband for help, especially because he's just like my dad, you know. He might leave me too, but that's not the case. Anyway, she had the courage to tell me that they knew what was going on. And they had found out through my work because somebody cared enough to talk to some other family members that worked there. And, well, I went to IOP and I did some of that stuff and I put my toe in the water and I went to quite a few meetings and I listened and I kind of got a sponsor and then I got another one and, but I wasn't doing the work. So after about 6 months, I went back out. It started with the little airplane bottles. Actually, I should probably say it started with vanilla extract. I never paid attention to the fact that there was alcohol in vanilla extract until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't that crazy? I did not realize. I never even thought about it, but that's the first liquor I had or alcohol I had after October 2010. That was the first alcohol I put in my body that I knew was alcohol, and I didn't know it until I came into AA. I might have heard it in the IOP class, but I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But that I just remember that that's what I had. And then I was buying them, and I said, well, that's crazy when I can buy an airline bottle. And then it progressed. But it didn't progress to where I was drinking at work. It progressed to where I was drinking before work. And it progressed to where I was lying to my husband when we were at the funeral of an employee that we had both worked with and cared a lot about. And of course, a lot of other employees were there. And my husband said, well, it smells like somebody's drinking. Have you been drinking? I pointed at somebody else and I said, no, but he just had shoulder surgery. I wouldn't blame him if he was drinking. So, you know, I went right back to my old behavior, hiding it, lying about it, concealing it. But the day of my last drink, June 30th, 2011, I had been drinking before work and we were celebrating. But I wasn't drinking at work. Okay. You know, I had the two vodka bottles waiting for me in the back of the truck though, that I had to pick up at the ABC store the night before. And I'm so glad I remember this. I'm so glad I remember how I felt when all this took place. It helps keep it real. It helps me when a newcomer comes in and I can feel all that anguish. But I left work. We were celebrating the anniversary of one of my coworkers, and the guys decided they wanted to get him a cake. And we could leave work. You know, we could go back and forth because we could leave for lunch and then come back. So I volunteered to go to Food Lion across the street from where we work. And of course, you know me, my bright idea. I got those two unopened bottles of vodka, cheap stuff, the stuff from underneath the bottom shelf, the one that you have to wipe the dust off to even want to break the seal. So I broke the seal. I left work at 11. It was about 8:30 that morning and took a couple of slugs as I was leaving the parking lot. Probably got a couple more when I was in the Food Lion parking lot. Went in, got that cake, got back to my little truck, because that's what it was. Took another couple slugs. So this is 9:15. And I was in a program where I was being monitored because my company knew that I had admitted I had a problem. They knew I had gone back out. So, well, they didn't know I had gone back out yet. They knew that afternoon. So this was a Thursday, and they hadn't tested me all week. So I got the inevitable phone call, and I said, you know, I'll be over there at 1:30, thinking, you know, that's, you know, 4 hours, 4.5 hours. That should be long enough. Oh, no. I blew a .03, which to all of us is nothing. But our company won't allow you to drive with any kind of alcohol in your system, which makes sense. It makes sense to me today. So I had to call and ask for a ride home. And I had to ask my husband, the one person I did not want to ask for anything. And he actually answered the phone. And I had to ask him for a ride. And the look on that man's face when he came to pick me up, the look of disappointment, because I told him I would never lie to him again. Well, you know, it never stopped. You know, I picked up where I left off 6 months after I had really started telling him the truth about stuff. So he took me over to my truck, and I gave him the two bottles of vodka that were in the back of it, and I went ahead and drove home. You know, I just couldn't leave the main office building and be seen driving. So I did drive home. But I had told, you know, I told the people in medical that I had some rum cake for lunch. Like that was going to cause me to blow a .03. Yeah. You know, liar, liar. Anyway, that was the beginning of my journey, the true beginning of my journey of recovery, because I finally got forced into the place where I had to ask somebody for help. And I had never done that before. I was good at my job. I was doing a job that some men have a hard time doing. And I was better than most of the guys I worked with at doing the job I was doing. It was very physical. Anyway, so I ended up going to treatment. I had to go to detox first, and they tried to say that they probably interpreted what I said the right way, but I don't know. I sometimes get twisted because I'm still kind of foggy. They made me the offer of going to treatment, and I said, I'd rather stay here, and I blamed it on my mother. She's in a nursing home. I'd rather stay here and go back to IOP. So my employer said, since you said you're not going to treatment, we're going to put you on the street. And I said, I didn't say that. I'll go to treatment. So I did. And I got to go to Father Martin's Ashley up in Maryland. Very spiritual place, a very good place for me. And I, again, accepted the help that was given me. And I was forced into it. I said, God is going to make sure that I get the help. But I think he's finally realized that he's going to have to back me into a corner before I really ask for it. So I went to treatment, had some wonderful experiences there, but I still thought about drinking every time I left an AA meeting, going up the steps to the bedroom. It was like, man, a drink sure would be good. And now I realize I drank for 40 years. I think it's pretty understandable that I was still thinking about taking a drink because the compulsion hadn't been removed. I hadn't prayed. I hadn't asked to be relieved of that compulsion. So there were a lot of steps for me to get to that point. I still didn't have a sponsor. Once I got home, you know, 28 days later, going back and forth to a counselor and going back and forth to IOP because I had to continue that, doggone it. And they kept asking me if I had a sponsor, and I'd say, not yet, not yet. Yeah, I'm working on it. And I remembered this one little lady, and I don't think she's here tonight. Some of the folks from my home group have met her, a little red-haired lady sat next to me in a speaker meeting up in Richmond. It was pretty new speaker meet. And she knew I was new. She had seen me at the Suffered Enough group, and I haven't told you my home group. My home group is Keep It Simple Group in Colonia Heights, Virginia. Ivy Memorial Methodist Church meets Monday, Wednesday at 8 p.m. and Fridays at 6:30. See, I'm all over the place. Anyway, I was sitting in this meeting, and this lady sat down, and she said, I've seen you around, and I've heard a little bit about you. And she said, so tell me, you have any kids? You know, are you married? You have any kids? I said, yeah. Between my husband and I, we have five kids. been working like 38 years at the same place and work shift work and blah, 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 blah. And she said, well, someday I'd like to hear your story. Well, that stayed with me. So I was on the way to the counselor's office and I had this woman's phone number. So I called her when I got to the office and got her voicemail and left a message and got my fingers crossed. Maybe she won't call back. Well, she did. When I got out of the office, I had a message from her and she said, let's sit down and talk and maybe we can make this thing work out, or at least temporarily. So she's been my sponsor ever since and she is wonderful. We are quite a bit alike, but our histories are different. She didn't drink a long time like I did. She doesn't have children. And it's like she wouldn't understand. Oh my goodness, she gets me. Just like y'all get me. And she has also told me she would never sponsor anybody the way she sponsored me. She was kind of new to sponsorship, and I think that was part of it. But I think part of it was because I drank for 40 years. My reading comprehension wasn't what it was when I graduated from high school back in 1972. This is 2011. So I couldn't understand the first 164 pages. So we started reading the stories. And then I was able to move more into the text of the book. And we worked the steps through reading the stories and from the 12 and 12, because I could kind of comprehend the 12 and 12. I'm telling you, I could kind of comprehend. It took a long time for my brain to clear. I feel so blessed that I can put two words together, much less write a couple sentences. But the joy I have felt in working with this woman, and with other women in the program is like nothing I ever thought I would find. When I first came back in, again, forced into that corner, I realized I was going to have to share my deepest, darkest secrets. And I know I've heard so many people saying, I had that one thing. And my one thing was a repeat of bad behavior, but it had different consequences to it. And that's what I didn't want to share. I have since shared that with more than just my sponsor. I've shared it with different women. And to let them know that, man, we really make some bad choices in life. And some of them we pay for in different ways. Sometimes, with me, it was just carrying that guilty conscience, the knowing that I could have done something different. And I didn't. But being able to share that, knowing that making the decision to turn it over, shifted my knowing that I'm alcoholic, and I've said this so many times recently. I had the knowledge that I'm an alcoholic, but that crap in my brain and that gray matter up there isn't what worked. It had to move from my head to my heart or to my soul. Filled that spot that I've been trying to fill for so many years. And working the steps with alcoholics, it doesn't matter whether it was with my sponsor or with the women I get to work with now, or sitting down one-on-one with a fellow that's having a problem with whatever. I don't sponsor any guys. I'm glad I've never been asked. I don't know how I'd react, but it doesn't matter today. I know a lot of good guys that can sponsor the other fellas and get them through the steps. Wow. I get all wrapped up in the feelings when I first came in the program. There's a lady on here today. Oh, my goodness. When I was 4 months sober, I was talking about my husband and how he didn't think I needed to come to meetings. And this just came to me, Miss Mary. I know you're still listening. And I said, you know, he doesn't think I need to go to meetings because I'm doing okay. You know, I'm feeling better. I probably dropped 20 pounds by then. And so I was looking better too. And she said, that's your disease talking to you. And it really hurt my feelings. You know, why is she talking to me that way? But once I got home and I was able to reflect on it, I knew she was right. That was that little booger sitting up here on my shoulder going, it's okay. You don't need these meetings, you know. And my IOP counselor said, you got to flick that sucker off. And she told me what to say, and I'm not going to say it in this meeting. But that woman is a big part of my recovery today. So are all the other women that are on here tonight and the guys too. But she let me know that she cares about me. And I know every person in this meeting today cares about me too. And that's the big thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. We want each other to recover. We want each other to stay healthy. We want each other to grow in the program. We don't want anybody to give up before that miracle happens. I've got so much to say, and service work is a huge part of my recovery. This is coming from, I've had so many service positions, and most of them have been, I came into the program and I joined the Keep It Simple group, and Bill was an upstanding member, and so was Ruth, and so was Nancy. And they, you know, there were a few other people, and Bill, held the service position at the time. Well, the secretary up had moved, and they looked at me and said, well, you can be secretary now. And I had like 6 months of time in the program, and not me. I can't even put two sentences together, and I don't even want talking to me, much less have to take minutes. And anyway, so I got to be secretary of the Keep It Simple group for a couple of years. And then, in fact, it might have been more than a couple, come to think of it. But as the group grew, then we had some other folks come in and take over and done a wonderful job. And I got to be chair of that group for one term. And I moved on up to the district level. I've just stepped down as intergroup chair for District 16, only because we decided that it was best to merge our intergroup in our district, because we just didn't have the participation within our district. It had gotten to be too much for the those of us that were trying to do the work, for us to fill all those positions by ourselves. But anyway, there has been, oh, and I was secretary for intergroup too. You know, I was phone watch chair. Oh my gosh. For somebody that doesn't like to talk, doesn't like to pick up the phone and call people, to be involved in phone watch and not know when the phone was going to ring and not know what to say when somebody does call. Wow. All we got to do is carry the message. All we got to do is say, well, this is what I did, or this is what somebody told me to do, and I didn't do it exactly like that. But give it a chance. This thing works if you let it. And wow, what a relief it is today. What a relief it is to have so many friends and family. Anywhere I go, I went to a meeting literally, physically in Ireland, like 6 years ago in Cork. Wow, they talk fast. A whole lot faster than we do down here. And I got to share a little bit, and it was my anniversary. It was my fourth anniversary, so it was 5 years ago. It was right at 5 years ago. So on July 5th, I was there, and I went up after the meeting in my shy, timid little self and said, I'm celebrating my anniversary tonight, and we don't do chips. Only you Yanks do the chips, you know. But the same gentleman had stood beside me and said, be prepared. Of course, he's in his Cockney accent or Irish accent, because they say the prayers very quickly. They say the Lord's Prayer, the Serenity Prayer, and I don't think it was preamble, but it was at least those two prayers. In 15 seconds, they were done, and I understood about three words. There was no way that I could have kept up with that. But it was fabulous. This gentleman took me on a tour right there on the street and showed me where the meeting originally was originally met back in like 19, probably 40, something like that, I think was what he was telling me. And he gave me his phone number and his email address. Have I used them? No. I do have them though. They're in my guide box. I know where they are. So this thing goes everywhere. And we can carry the message. I know everybody, a lot of people say you might be the only big book somebody comes in contact with. And that's very true. And I try to remember that. All of us walk our own path. I still love the stories in the back of the book. I know that I need to rely, and I haven't even really talked about how I went through the steps and the things that came to light and things I found out about myself, my character defects, all the my shyness wasn't really shyness. That was, I was so self-absorbed that I didn't want anybody looking at me, you know. I was fearful of somebody looking at me and going, oh, look at those teeth or whatever. People weren't looking at me, and I know that today. They might be today, only if it's on speaker screen or whatever. I don't know. I don't know that much about Zoom. This is a new experience speaking with a meeting like this. One of the big things I found out most recently, January 1st, a young lady was speaking at our little Alcathon. She has 10 years of sobriety, and she said her life changed when she realized she wasn't a victim anymore. And I was sitting there listening to this young woman, and I say young, not half my age, but not much more than that. And I said, that's the difference in me today, because I had worked the steps. I had done my amends to the best of my ability. Some of them, you know, still, you know, the living amends, we still have to work on them. But I wasn't a victim of my past anymore. All the time, you know, I drank all through my kids' teenage and adult years. I had grandchildren that were adults by the time I got sober. And I felt like I had a whole lot of making up to them. But I can accept that today. I own it. And sometimes now they laugh when they tell me a story I don't remember. You know, of a camping trip or something that I know I was there. We had five kids. I did all the cooking, all that, excuse me. But I still had my beer. I still had my bourbon because it was part of my psyche at the time. I had to have it, evidently. But what a replacement I have today. I have all of y'all. I have a God of my understanding. My sponsor said one time not too long ago, it went from the God of my misunderstanding to the God of my understanding. Wow. That to me was deep, because my whole perception of my higher power has changed. Through prayer and meditation, I see him or her differently when I need to. If I need my daddy telling me to buck up and walk through this pain, or if I need the mama pat me on the shoulder going, it's going to be okay, baby. You're going to be okay today. You know, God knows what I need. I don't know what I need. And you know, it's funny. It's almost 10 minutes till. I have not talked about making amends with my father, who, you know, caused such a big rift in our entire family, actually. And he ended up living here. He lived downstairs where my mom used to live for like 6 months. I would have never thought anything like that could happen. We made amends the best we could. And part of his amends, without him knowing it to me, was his work with the veterans. I saw he was doing for them that he didn't do for me, you know. But I'm okay with that today. I wasn't for a long time. But he has helped so many people that I was able to let it go, because it wasn't about me. It was about him. I didn't have anything to do with the reason you left, and I know that today. We also lost a great-grandchild, and a lot of y'all were with me through that. Oh, my goodness. She was born healthy, and she died 8 days later. Bam. She was healthy, and then she wasn't. I would come into meetings and spill my guts. And I go to another meeting, suffered enough out on 360 off of 288 near Brandermill. And they say the third step prayer. And they had just really started saying that prayer when that happened. It was a year after my mom passed when Ariana was born, and then she was taken from us. And that prayer, when that baby was in the hospital, that prayer and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous helped me be a part of that journey for my family. And I'm still a part of it because Alcoholics Anonymous. I could let go of my feelings about how I was being affected and share it with y'all. And then I could be there for my family. And for that, I'll be forever grateful to y'all. I can't do this without you. And I don't plan on trying. I talked to somebody this morning and she said, you know, she stepped away from the fellowship. It was about 5 years and she realized she was really getting squirrely and she wasn't liking herself. And she realized what she was missing. She was missing AA and a sponsor and working the steps and learning how to accept life on life's terms again. And she said that she hadn't realized how much she missed it until she was back and realized how much she needed to hear the solution. And that's what I hear from all of y'all. I like being in the middle of AA today. And I'm so glad I'm here. So thanks for letting me share. Is that long enough, Billy?